Barbara Henning, coming from Denver. Barbara, all the way from Brooklyn, New York, where I'm from. You might remember Barbara from several years ago, was one of our esteemed board members. And Maureen has, I'm just meeting you for the first time, so hello, has published with Shaq's Press. And we have lots and lots of connections. This is a homecoming of sorts. And I'm so delighted to welcome both of you. Thank you for coming. And thank you all for coming. Before I turn the podium over to our readers and to our introducers, just a couple of items of business, as we always have. So we'd like to thank our usual associates and organizations, and the Arizona Commission of the Arts, the Arts Foundation of Tucson and Southern Arizona, Poets and Writers, the U of A English Department, the U of A Poetry Center, Arizona Quarterly, some of our occasional partners, the Casa Libre, Tucson Poetry Festival, Quarry Press, Words on the Avenue, and of course a very special thank you to Jim Wilcox and to Warehouse Arts Management for hosting us in this wonderful space. A quick sensibility announcement. POG intends this to be a safe space, an inclusive space, and if anybody should feel otherwise, please don't hesitate to let one of us know. Maybe if I could have the board of directors just raise your hand. Please come say hi to any one of us and let us know. I would like to also remind you of some fantastic events that are coming up as soon as tomorrow. So tomorrow we have a special, I guess, co-sponsoring with Mary Rose, Jack Blanc.
Co-conspirator.
I am definitely co-conspirator.
At the Exploded View Gallery, which is on 197 East Tool tomorrow, the unusual, but tomorrow, Sunday, February 17th at 7 p.m. Happy to not see somebody who has such an incredibly expressive face. And also, we're very happy to partner with and to welcome Joe Larkin and Robert Hirschhoff, who will be reading in this space on Friday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. I'm sure Joe can answer any questions, if you have any. And this is also on our Facebook page. And finally, if you want to just, you know, please avail yourself of this wonderful flyer that Charles put together. And we have all of our upcoming readers. We have Ray Armantrout coming, for example. And we're going to have a POG celebration in May, so we hope to see you all there, too. We have a special GoFundMe page for this. If anybody feels so inclined as to help us with a small donation, we would be eternally grateful to you. And we have books for sale, and Charles made a beautiful broadside of Maureen and Barbara's work. And please help yourself with some snacks. We are going to not have a break. We're going to go right from first reader to second reader, so without further ado, Charles, to introduce Maureen. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you. Steve is very kind to say anyone so inclined. I'm a little more hard line and like to quote Kenneth Patchen, who said, you know, anybody who says they love poetry and never buy any are cheap sons of bitches. Anyway, I'm here to introduce Maureen Owen, who is the founder, editor-in-chief of Telephone Magazine and Telephone Books, one of the really great poetry and literature journals and presses of the late 1960s through early 1980s, you know, in building communities through poetry. She has 11 books. I'm not going to name them all. I will say that her book, A.E., was the recipient of the prestigious, and very prestigious to me, I think, one of the most important awards in American poetry, the Before Columbus American Book Award. I was privileged to publish her book, Edges of Water. I'm going to not do all the bio stuff. I'm kind of going to skip to stuff I think about you. To dive in or swim in a Maureen Owen poem is to be in an otherness that she makes that way through her amazing sense of diction and syntax in words, as in the poem On the Broadside, which begins and is titled, "Not When It Snows, But When I Snow." which takes us out of conventionality, which defamiliarizes our experience. Yet it's not only Owen's imagination we embrace when we take such leaps with her. Rather, it is our own. Something both familiar and unfamiliar at the same time. We are given what we know, yet it is transformed. And in such transformation, we are given an opportunity to grow, to change, to imagine, to wonder. In one of the poems in Edges of Water, she writes, which I think of as about the capacity of such wonder and of the capacity of the imagination to contain multitudes. She writes, "I am thinking of difference, soft sweep of the moon, rush of straw on baked clay. When the sun goes down, I'll water the yarrow in yellow dark. Aborigines singing hopscotch, join, noisy night owls. Whatever was on Mars is gone now." We also visit in her work and in that book a community or grand collage of artists. We find Fanny Howe, Eric Satie, Jenny Dore, and Laureen Niedecker, Elizabeth Murray, and many more. We read and are part of that community. Community is essential to Pog, and certainly to Maureen Owen, who through that work with telephone books and her work at the Poetry Project in New York and her work at Naropa University has gone to extraordinary lengths to establish and nurture communities around art and poetry. Tonight, she is part of our community, as are you. Please welcome Maureen Owen.
Lovely introduction, Charles. And thanks everyone for coming. Barbara and I are excited to be here. I'm going to start by reading the poems in our little pamphlet that we made for our On the Road tour, with the cover by Pamela Lawton, a young New York artist, who's a really great artist. In this last year, I started taking care of my mother, who's 95, and the first couple of four poems I'm going to read are about that experience a little bit. I went and stayed with her. She lives up in the High Sierras in Truckee, California, and so that's where a number of these were written. The first one is appropriately entitled, Mom. She wears my flip-flops in mid-afternoon sun. I shade her ankles and feet with my shadow. The pines nap too, still and drowsy in their altitude, as a baby breathes, soft and scarcely. It hurts my neck, but I can't stop staring up at them. Their glassy needle tops bristle, rolling, heaving, sea above. And the second one, also about her, is titled Dazzle Camouflage. Does anyone know what a dazzle camouflage is? It's kind of cool, that's why I made the title anyway. It's a camouflage, it's not really a camouflage, but what happens is that the scene is so chaotic and confusing that you can't tell what the object is.
I want to put this more in your face.
All right.
Get some more. Okay.
Dazzle camouflage. Green that goes straight up, tousled locks of branches. Thin green as still as bays, firs and pines. The great green cargo of these branches in layers, thick green hunks of rafts of forest, pitch and foam. Kids across the way put up a makeshift stand by the side of the road, shake dust from little trucks and chant, "Toys for sale." They plan to buy ice cream with the money. Placing cloth chairs in the sun for her, moving to dappled shade when sun too hot, then back to sun when shade too cool, Try to find a level spot for her chair in slantedness. Move small table for water with chair. Keep moving as sun moves, tall shadows of the pines. Screeching stellar jays, dark-eyed ginkgo. No summer insects sing, not one. Utter silence breaches. It's the last of the eight, giants up and leading 3-1. So my mother is a football fan. She never misses a game. And this is another one in that sequence. Some of my titles are very long, so this is the title. The queen is a triangle. The knight is a right angle. The bishop, diagonal. Moving the pawn is like the queen, only lesser, she said. And this is a poem. The pines look woolly up November's air. She rolls her hand in crisp leaves under her chair. What are you looking for? My glove. You have both your gloves on. Oh, I thought I dropped one. And this is called, titled, They Called from Mongolia as They Were Digging Up the Bones. It's about poverty and how the poor are used to sell things to the rich, as models for fashion, as vivid, colorful, shabby chic, as peppered and parsleyed with timber. Behind us, the snowed hills stratify, an occasional slab of river emerging glitter from the ice. Herds of cattle, knee-deep in snow, gather at an alfalfa hay drop. A painting made this, doubt. A swarm of chunks of cirrus nods to curlicues. Getting mad at anger is counterproductive. It's really about trickery, like her. Squirrels swoop the green branches. The pines sway hypnotically. Their bunches hover and bounce. Deep layers float and bob, swirl and murmuration. We get mail today at last, a jar of face cream. Our skin is saved. Did you call Nancy? We'll call her a little later, I say. Are we late? My mother asks. And this is titled Pentecost. I first saw the word facsimile on the nameplate of a racehorse's halter, a deep chestnut gelding, I, a kid, standing in the shed row, mid-afternoon sun setting, his coat a red-orange fire, he leaning from his stall door. I kind of grew up on the racetrack. My parents were horse trainers, and so I learned all my vocabulary there. This is titled, Her fingers were like little green lizards. Except for a lowercase r, rain had washed the ink off the note, fringed as hastily torn paper encountering a leaf. A neighbor goes into the gray stucco on the other side of the white stucco where wild cactus grows. Never let me say, three bare boys stand, a striped strip of ribbon, chartreuse, plaster, jet, rojo, forest gloss, fluttering across genitals. Shirts strung in witty dyes fold round his shoulders, button down, button open at the collar, cherry metallic jacket, panted leg, balanced on the heel of sparky ebony loafers, sans socks, a poor boy dressed for magic, rococo. And some of my poems have several titles. This one has three titles. There was nothing where I haven't been since I hadn't gone for such a long time, or everybody wants to buy your car. Swollen, braided, breathing, seascapes, landscapes, bedroom paintings. Did I come away edgy on the way back? Might those, even so, not just need some fabric never noticed, all the while this uniquely insisting, what you'd guess but don't expect. We know the names of the mistakes now. Tiny fields of view seem to squeeze the moon in the snow like bundles of sheets rolled in cotton, where dancers move their arms through heavy satin. And this one is dedicated to the New York poet Ed Friedman. I don't know if anyone knows his work. Very good one. And it has two titles, kind of long. Balmy tomorrow, Saturday, more snow predicted. The lilacs are in turmoil. Or Lariat. This is a poem. All of those years here are gone, she said in Spanish, as she picked through the wreckage littering the trailer where she and her husband and their five children had lived for almost a decade. The way it looked, butter moon in battered shards, one-fourth up the east wall of the beauty parlor, much as honeycomb, that face. That moon squinting out along, such a sing of cricket, katydid, hopper, and cicada, loose stitches in the seam. Chanel referred to the nuns at the orphanage as her aunts through the glassless windows. On Saturn, diamonds rained down, as into a pool lit from above, whether we were different fishers. Downhill to us came a kimono woman swinging a bright Japanese lantern, igniting tufts of grass. Like a child, I have checked my closet before bed. And this is a shorter poem that has no title. Very rare moment yet. Was death ever so beautiful, with carefully drawn wings in a long black sheath, an orange-yellow lantern fan in her hand? This just has a long time. Unbearably slow, the vortex aviates their arrival. That's just one of the reasons filming birds is frustrating. This is the poem. When you leave someone, you said to yourself in the elevator going down, the folds and creases of a shirt, the threads and buttons rushing past, the instant making such economic noise, a tipping solace, awkward if you're on your own. When you leave someone, you said so yourself in the elevator going down. Here's what you should do. Borrowings chipped in haste, adumbrating a plum ferocity. Was that for being too chic, too steep for angling, perched on a painted result of things? At some point, you will know artifact, how we are the result of what we do to our nature. But it being summer when you came down in the elevator, the grass was sizzling. And the last poem in the pamphlet of mine has two titles. Liquitex, my darling, fatty acid bloom, my love, white haze, newsprint, and wax paper, saying it still does, or except various, though she headed. Must we die, Mesopotamia? Clock set right, but the time is wrong. You can help me tie your shoe for you, a little crystal blister found in the grain field. My mother dreamt of the wind, the ponies, drifting up into the thick dust draft of it. Tiny rectangular forms with legs rushing about in an ochre glaze. Rolls of crepe twisting in manes and tails, wide-eyed for oxygen and water. We bring our own territory with us, terracotta loche, and long its dawn now taken. We pose, clad uniquely, fungible the window behind us. And then I'm going to read a little set of new poems. I guess it's just one long title. El Perdón. On bended knee, the skeleton apologizes to the skeleton. Is it too late? This is the poem. Oh, bony patella, ivory kneecap, hung up, wall side of my morning, crunched to tin, to stucco, to us. Only so far untied from one another, only so far let go, linked and dangling, a circle of sheet ghosts ringing a tree. Scoop some water from the valley, as if cobalt to a shrine. The universe expands, and with it, time is leaving us. Our hearing is disappearing. Scientists capture the sound of black holes colliding 1 billion light years away, a fleeting chirp. Let the bones talk, chalky and fluent, evicted from biology, riddled and cranking, flannel and cotton from coat hooks of shoulders. Gravity's wave has whispered to us. Let the bones, the desperate bones, the atrocious snoring monochrome bones, the outrageous sneezing penitent bones, apologize one more time to each other. Then let's wave back to the gravitational wave. This is called them. I won't kid you, I'm not formlessness. Profound isn't a mere reply. Shifting streams of turbulent penance. Getting there in one piece, I felt forgotten on the heels of how she put it. Rouge, the whole mess. Low barge, huffing and puffing, caresses the sides of our feet, the palms of our hands. A fear of the desert, even ours. A bear traveling in the sky, a single orb holding all weather. That's weather, not weather. And this is a short, a very short poem. So you have to listen. Called Ohashi Des. I eat differently when I use chopsticks. This has two titles. Synthesis, cross-hatching, tension, like the lattice top of a pie, or a counterproof. A small green bruise on the side of the top of her knee. Soon other odd changes occur. She hopes the cast will be off soon. She hopes the drums will do the talking for them both. Jane Austen first sensibly said yes to her beau's proposal, then more romantically said no the next day. Under black chalk with traces of red pencil, pell-mell, a thief steals my one red pot placed at the end of the salt tile porch. Turning and working into the fabric of the paper, he pauses his tall burnt shadow. There is no shortcut will benefit the process. What if hair is not so important after all? A man kisses a shoe. Every distinct twig on the winter branch, every tiny pebble on the mountain, blueprinting possibilities for where gravity now, a raw dress, hangs, radiating mica. This is titled, Mushrooms Grow a White Net Underground, she said, and spread her fingers. Just do it anonymously. With an avatar name, a building frenzy consumes the skyline, painted steel balconies of sacred blue, orange, red, and corn yellow. Rent a state of mind, then you can always move. The thing about the sky, about wanting to jump into it or face it straight up. I might have read that somewhere. Nature is indifferent to us. We come and we go. Whatever, says nature, takes it on the chin. From love life is moved as him, maybe. Spaces have abandoned luxury or have opened it languidly, as one opens a bottle of homemade wine, its oversized flamboyance entering the woods. This is a super long title. I'll just tell you when the title's over. Everything turns on a delicate measure. Was it the same night they were to meet, or had that night already passed? How fragile was the night they were to meet, never mentioned again. The eye, for lack of direction, will settle beneath the shallows, or in the grove of restless trees. On clear, hand in hand, if you're game, not more than that, or then a sense of wanting to be left alone against a pair of floral pillows. There is only the pedestrian, saddled by a passion, and the tracks of the ginger's nap, weak faith that you were. I love that poem. This is dedicated to the poet Bill Bergson, who passed away a couple of years ago, a New York poet. Everyone has lost a memory. She pokes me as the altar boy hoists a long pole crucifix. Look, Jesus has a broken arm. The snapped forearm swings rhythmically on its pinning. Marilyn Monroe never takes her gloves off through the whole performance. The other singer has to do all the finger snapping. Time to get out the thread, the swishing of a detail veers. Perhaps our brains do all the guesswork, winking. We see the nose and upper mouthpiece of the iron war mask fastened with tiny latches shaped as doves. And no, heat, thick and soundless, baffles the leaves, but the tree shades itself. And this is a very short poem titled Light, Color, Composition, and Plasticity. The poem is actually shorter than the title. Charles Olson and Edward Dahlberg, double dated. And then I'm just going to read a couple of poems from Edges of Water. Kind of a long title. To our foreheads shaking, poorly built ruckus of howling abstraction, or it could be dangerous for me to leave my sight. Three Aboriginal women again, rowing a wood boat this time, my mother's house filling with water, long paddles stretching lazily over the wet gouache, at lake bottom a maze of finely painted hunting expeditions. Smooth monster egg depiction of debris, floating dresses pink and slate of rosé. Imagine dark tortoise mermaids you won't see. They literally go crazy tattooed from cheap rents. Spotless damp evening air lifting up an island, not an ocean. Sky the color of elephants. These women glide, sleek, casual, not wearing continual explaining, not interfering with thinking. And this poem is titled The Indigo Blue Headscarf Poem for Fanny. Make mine milk, Wild Bill Elliott said, roaming through the tongue's secure motion, souls reborn in the body of bodies. The indigo blue headscarf starts life drifting in open water. Now the bones of our fingers cover our eyes, patter over our ears, trawl air to uncover what sense we are. Surely we didn't go on slurping from these tin bowls, snow shovels scraping at the ice, dealing with paper and loss. The Annunciation angel stands on her head. Ophelia has fashioned the straw and coasts serenely. Thoughts being intentions, being feelings. The day has warmed, but is this the address where we were supposed to show up? In the photo, the earth appears so far away, yet we are on it. I was going to read that one, Charles.
Read it again. I want to hear it.
No. We already read it. You read it quite well.
I didn't read the whole thing, though.
You didn't? I think you did. Well, you just read the title, probably. Which is fine. The title was, our Here, sounds of beads of sweat drying make sorrow better. This is called Star-Crossed Ceramic Lovers End It All, or Scrubland. Behold a great swath of the city's history. Once a church, then a mosque, now a museum. This happens to streetscapes in the dead of winter. Traffic comes back meaning such a linguist who insists on referring to a shot of vodka. Is it perilous to be wearing the pants of the remembered event? To be drawn into a maze of side streets, slick with packed snow, banished by brushes dunked in water? Crunched bags of lovers, dozens of them, joyous colored glazes, rose and pink of giant pairs of heads, creating conversation. He had been that great a girlfriend. And this is called, What Made the Scholar Holler Was Her Love of Mozambique. Ornate Moorish squiggles, scoot, gab, notch, sidereal, spotted pint-sized fancies, unescorted, bodies of humbler folk tucked in wall niches, now empty. No one in the freezer. Now you are everywhere, like the light. What's hard to miss, plenteous, is the question, writing, nature of a witness attached to the word, gangling large and small instead. And then I'm just going to read a couple of short poems from Erosions of Hollow. I'll read Whenever I Snow. The title is Whenever I Snow. I think of Black Beauty when he was pulling a cab, standing street side under a lamppost, his dark harness gathering flakes, a jet horse becoming white powder, a dark horse disappearing. And finish with this poem, also a short poem. It's titled, I Fell in Love. I fell in love. I did it by myself. There are some things you shouldn't do alone.
Thank you so much, Marie. It was beautiful. I love those titles.
Yeah, nice.
So we're going to have Cynthia Miller introduce Barbara. And I think afterwards we'll do a quick Q&A if you guys are up for that too.
Sure.
Thank you.
The heater works. That's how long we're here. This is not cold, guys. We're such winners. So this is really a reunion, I have to say, and it's a reunion in a lot of ways, and because there's a lot of people here that were in our past generation of POG when Charles and I lived in Tucson before we floated off to Texas, or swallowed up by Texas for 4 years. Yeah, I feel like a time traveler. You must feel like that too. Anyway, I just wanted to, before I get into Barbara, which is plenty, is to let you know in April we have a roundtable discussion with Cynthia Ho, Karen Brannon, and Linda Hinton, right?
Laurie Hinton,
I'm sorry. Poetry and the Visual. And it will be here April 13th. So it's on the list if you pick up the schedule for the spring. I just want to make sure we're acknowledge that, because it's going to be great. Okay, here we go. I have to write these things down. Being a painter, I have to test to be visual. Barbara Henning is on a journey. How appropriate. As throughout her many chapbooks and poetry books, like Cities and Memory, published by Chax Press, by the way, she's also traveling, walking herself, or imagining another place through someone else's story, along a street, in a far city, or a desert, a war zone, a mountain, a favorite restaurant. Writing in prose poem style, short or long paragraphs describe and evoke a landscape of facts. Here the leaves fall, the ferns darken at the end of summer, facts that turn in their delicate awareness into something luminous and knowing, as if to know everything from the inside out. In her latest book, Just Like That, a sort of just the facts about love relationships from a female perspective, we are treated to what John Curley describes as a furiously cerebral rumination on love, passion, and the evanescent, mysterious quality of love and its attachment, past and present. Set in New York City, where loving and living may be most difficult for our species, Barbara Henning lays no blame, points no finger, doesn't see anyone, doesn't sue anyone or wish them ill. She recounts honestly and with simple, graceful empathy the path of love through her eyes as she travels through. Other books you might be interested in, if you haven't read them, is her interviews with Harriet Mullen, Looking Up Harriet Mullen, really fantastic. And also, one of my favorites is her, she edited the selected prose of Bobby Lee's Hawkins, always worth a read, timeless. But anyway, tonight, Barbara, thank you for coming. Barbara.
Hi, everyone. Great to be here back in Tucson. I loved living here. I wanted to do something before I start. I know this is awful, but we've been documenting this book forever. And we've been taking pictures of audiences.
And I want to get some of your.
Okay. I guess, oh, I have to do one of those.
Panorama.
Last night. We'll have to glue them together. Okay. Great. So I'm really happy to be here and read in Tucson, as I said before. And I'm going to read from this novel that Cynthia was talking about first, and then I'll read some poems. So it is, she gave a good introduction, so I won't talk about what it's about, which she already did that. Okay. I'm going to read here. It's composing a lot of vignettes that sort of build up and day to day. And I'm going to read some from the beginning as soon as the train goes by. It was near midnight. My air conditioner was broken, and the temperature was in the 90s. On the corner of St. Mark's and First Avenue, Emily Zane was talking on her cell phone, her head wrapped in a red African scarf, her gray dreads tumbling out on top. Some young men and women were standing by the curb smoking. When Emily noticed me, she put her phone in her bag. She was out for a walk, too. We headed toward the park, stopping to talk under the giant elm tree decorated with strings of Krishna flowers. We chatted about friends, poetry readings, and our difficulties with asthma, worse for both of us after 9/11. Then she told me about an acupuncturist who she thought may be able to help me. He'd helped her and her mother. Inside the cover of my journal, she wrote, Jabari Mwanja, Madison Avenue. Is he African, I asked? No, he was born in D.C., but he changed his name. We hugged and then headed toward our separate apartments on opposite sides of the park. At home, I opened my journal and bookmarked the page with his name. At 12 years old, I had the first of a reoccurring dream about my mother. She wasn't really dead. She lived in a house in a subdivision with other children. I was riding my bike up and down streets under the shade of big elm trees, looking for a little cinder block house. Standing inside the front door, I called her name. I heard her calling me, Sarah. I went down a long hallway and found her lying on her green couch, but she had no arms or legs. Mama, I woke up weeping. 50 years later, I still weep, but the dream has changed. Tonight, there are corridors in the house with many rooms, one opening into another, and my mother is nowhere to be found. I hesitated for a month before calling the acupuncturist. Finally, in October, following a week of rain, when the sky was clear and leaves were starting to fall and clutter the sidewalks, I made an appointment. He was a tall, lanky, light-skinned black man with dark brown eyes, wearing a doctor's white coat. Skipping. When I was on the table, he adjusted a little towel around my breast, and then he moved around me, putting needles into my wrists, ankles, and chest. I could feel fluid starting to gather in my upper lungs, and my bra felt too tight. I was afraid of coughing. I asked him if he could unhook it. He smiled and reached under me, saying, "I'm out of practice." When he was gone, I closed my eyes and imagined dancing with him in the dark, his arms around me, swaying together. But then my nose began to itch on the left side. Later, I learned that with acupuncture, the chi starts moving around in your body, sometimes causing an itchy sensation. My nose started to itch so much that my eyes watered. Then the itch moved to the right side, then stopped, and my thoughts started drifting again, this time about Lenny, my ex-husband. Just a few weeks earlier, I'd gone to visit the spot where we buried his ashes in the forest in Michigan, on the land where my sister lived. But the river had changed course, and I couldn't find him. Tears started to well in my eyes, and my right nostril started itching again. I couldn't lie still. I called out to Dr. Jabari, but he couldn't hear me. I looked down at my arm to see if there was a needle in my elbow. No, so I moved my arm carefully, the two needles in my wrist dangling. When I touched my nostril with my thumb, the itch stopped. I laid my arm down and was off dancing with him again. Okay, now I'm going to skip ahead to when the character just happened to be in Tucson. Okay. Simultaneous to when I was here. Okay. I wrapped a scarf around my head and coasted downhill toward downtown Tucson over the broken cement with little or no traffic on the empty side streets under the wide blue desert sky. At Cafe Passe, I settled down with a bowl of oatmeal and my computer in the back corner, working on a student's poem for a class I was teaching at the Poetry Center. When my phone rang, I took it out of my bag and looked at the screen. It was Jabari. She's been broken up with him and had some medical surgery and had kicked back to Tucson. "Sarah, how are you?" His voice was quiet. "Much better." There was a moment of silence. "Are you starting to gain weight?" he asked. "Yes, how are you? Is your headache better?" Blueberries and homeopathic, not Muricom, finally did the trick. Another moment of silence. It had been a week since we had spoken. "What happened to us, Jabari?" "I'm writing you a letter," he said. "I miss you, Sarah." "I miss you too, Jabari, but I don't understand what happened. I'm having intense longing for us. I found a pair of your panties in the laundry. I'm going to sleep with them." "So you miss me. Do you love me?" "Yes, I love you." "Beyond lust?" "Lust? There's no lust here. Sex is a way of feeling connected, as you often say, a way to channel our emotions in a physical way. Loving you is different. I haven't felt this way about anyone except my wife." "Then I don't understand why you said those things to me. I've been under a lot of pressure. I'll explain to you later. Where are you?" "I'm in a cafe. In a few minutes, I'm going to bike back to my apartment." "Biking? You must be feeling better." "Lisa lent me her bike, and I go slowly. It's warmer here. I'm in between patients. I can't stop thinking of you. I'll call later." Skipping. That night, he sent a long email about how much I meant to him and about his mother as maybe the root of his tendency to be irritated. Once he told me a story about his mother tying him to a stairwell and beating him with a wire. He was Zahir's age. "I am nothing like this mother." Still, he often heard me as critical, like her. I made my breakfast smoothie and sat outside in the Tucson sun, listening to the tiny brown birds pecking around the cacti in front of the house. I carried a pan of water out to the yard for them. They fanned away from me, and when I was on the back patio clustered around the water. I'm skipping around all over to make it work. After the poetry reading, friends gathered for dinner at a Mexican restaurant in El Barrio section of Tucson. Afterwards, as we walked toward the car, it was cold and drizzly. My friend Cynthia wanted to stop to light a candle in El Torradito, a shrine established long ago for a man who had died fighting for the love of a woman. People lit candles there to help free his soul and wrote little notes about their lost love, which they tucked into cracks in the wall. I looked at the wall and thought about Jabari. Cynthia noticed I was shivering and said to her husband, "Sarah's getting cold. You gotta gain some weight, kiddo." They walked me back to the car. When they dropped me off, the train was blowing its horn and passing through Tucson again. I had to make that part. Right in Tucson. Skipping up ahead. A line of people along the 7th Street side of Tompkins Square were waiting for food, mostly Chinese women and some of the homeless men who huddled under the scaffolding on the corner at night. Zahir and I crossed the street to avoid the smoke from their cigarettes. Then he ran into the park to play with a little girl named Gitana. I was chatting with her grandmother with my faulty Spanish. When we saw a little boy fall down and start crying, she taught me the Spanish conjugation for to fall down. Se caer, caerse, un muchacho, se caer. Then Zahir and I headed uptown to his father's office. He scooted ahead on the sidewalk, looking over his shoulder to make sure I was still there. After I dropped him off, I spent the afternoon in a cafe working on my poems, searching for interesting sentences and ideas in March of 2012 with the words mouth, teeth, orchestrate, tongue, and slips. As usual with this project, I got distracted from the research and started accumulating notes about giant fleas with sharp mouths feeding on dinosaurs. I started weaving words and stories together about baby Dylan, then something about Patti Smith, and finally a little bit from a movie I loved, Melancholia. And this is the poem. Dylan slips on the bottom rung of the slide. He stands up and starts to cry. Looking at me, he frowns and says, "Grandma, I'm always falling down. Some say hitting bottom is a prelude to a rebound. Fleas were 10 times bigger then, and their mouths were sharp enough to feed on dinosaurs. Our mouths, teeth, and tongues are orchestrated to enunciate the inner and the outer. Crouched down, Patti Smith is naked and clutching the top rung of a radiator while staring directly into Mapplethorpe's camera. The strange and sulky beauty of always. A reflection of gas flames from the fireplace flickering on the window as the planet moves closer and closer to the end of its lifespan, this ravishingly beautiful Earth." I'm skipping. At night, Jabari and I talk about his taxes. He said he had an accountant to help. I said, "You people have to know the rules because it's so stacked against you." He started laughing. "You people never say that." Then he fell asleep at an angle across the bed, my leg angling over his body. When he turned over to sleep, I huddled into the corner, reading a book. "Hurry up and finish reading," he said. "I want to join you." I slipped out of bed, showered, and then we slept all night with at least one limb touching the other. Outside the window, the sound of birds, and in the distance, children screaming. This is a new vignette. School was out for the summer. A jackhammer was breaking cement, and a man was yelling something. Someone was throwing something into the dumpster. The sky was gray but lighter in one area, helping us remember that even if we couldn't see it, we were passing the sun and the sun was passing us. The rumbling sound of a truck pulling over for alternate side parking, and then the street cleaner coming around the corner. Sound like the East Village? I'm gonna skip way toward the end. When I got home from school and started to cook dinner, my cell phone beeped. It was a call from Jabari. "Had a dream of you last night. Are you all right?" "I'm fine. You?" "Disconcerting. Your face was powdered white, like those Japanese kabuki performers, or French mime, or African ritual participants. Otherworldly. So what is this dream saying?" "African perspective on white Kaskaria faces. You have distance yourself from being ego-centered, and you're letting the higher forces guide you. Not sure what kabuki means, nor French mime. What is it saying about you? It's your dream. Obviously, my whiteness is a mask." I stopped by your apartment, was in your kitchen taking off my clothes. You were not reacting emotionally, and I was taken by surprise. You were free of reacting, more like you were centered. My reason for being there was to help fix or repair something, and I didn't expect you to come. I had keys and had let myself in. I'm in your mind, not easy to erase. Well, that's for sure. By free of reacting, do you mean I wasn't being an emotional human being? Or I wasn't engaging sensually with you? Are you wondering if it's really over between us? I had no idea about the last part. On my way home from Annelle's today, I started imagining what my new boyfriend would look like. As I put him together part by part, he had an uncanny resemblance to you. So perhaps you will attract him, your imagined boyfriend. Okay, man friend. If his initials are JKU, I won't start unless we begin with a therapist meeting. Okay, I'm just going to back up a little bit because I want to end with this one on this part of the reading. When I opened the door, he looked at me with a mildly guilty look on his face. We immediately started hugging and kissing. We didn't talk about anything. I massaged his back with oil and herbs where it hurt. He was a little weak from fasting, so he couldn't stop losing seed, and that just made him weaker. He said he had never met a single woman from the online thing. He fell into a deep sleep. I went to sleep on the cushions on the floor. When he left, I thought, he can't leave me, but he wants a wife. I can't be a wife like he wants. Maybe I should help him out and leave him. I was getting close to finishing the first draft of my novel, and I had no idea how to close it. Day by day, I was accumulating our stories, waiting to know when to end the story. I felt vaguely guilty about this. Sometimes I wondered whether I was writing the relationship or the relationship was writing the novel. Anyhow. I'm going to read, this is my last book of poems. It's called A Day Like Today. I'm going to read just a few poems from this. Actually, the one poem I read in the novel, this actually comes in this book. So here we are. It's a different mood. Off to the stationery store on Avenue A to buy paper and metal bookends. At least 58 people died in Europe this week in a brutal cold wave, plunging temperatures to 17 degrees below zero. When I step inside, I'm suddenly phlegmy and coughing. Blood starts pouring out of my left nostril. A funny old woman hidden inside a blue hooded coat darts out the door. Republicans point at the millions of immigrant workers pouring into the country. Then I look in the mirror and see a funny-looking old woman with her head wrapped like a mummy and a tissue stuck in her nose. King Tut's mummy was recently removed from the sarcophagus and placed in a climate-controlled box to be displayed at a museum in Luxor. My husband often had a bloody nose. Maybe we'll find each other in another life. When I think of losing my children, I feel my body crack into pieces. China's cracking down on subversive meditating disciples of the Dalai Lama. Be thankful for now, Barbara, today, this minute, here we are. Led Zeppelin touches down in NYC for a quick reunion. And on the bus, a middle-aged woman loudly scolds an adolescent for combing her hair and letting it touch her jacket. The politician doesn't want to come off as a scold, and the ecologist refuses to scold the bug-fearing masses. Instead, he sits quietly inside a forest circle, listening and breathing. An old woman is unsteady in the bus, but no one offers her a seat, some kind of planetary thing. At the bottom and in the middle, they say American society is fraying, just as a small Earth-like planet is found in the Alpha Centauri, a triple star system, our closest neighbor 4.4 light years away. When the melatonin hour arrives and the moon turns, like dancers rotating around a yogi split, a lathe as a geometric compass, we go deeply into our shared intimate circle of sleep. One more from here. In a small cloud, a poet tells me that he has been ill. His breath stinks. Unconsciously, I move backwards. Maybe I'm going to tell him too. When Alan was dying, we were in a restaurant and people stared at him. His teeth were falling out. It's hard to be presentable when you're ill. Backward doesn't necessarily mean. I love that train. Backward doesn't necessarily mean we are going backwards. Walking home from the poetry project, I tap my leg and count while holding my breath, toe-tapping rhythms. Today it's possible to look around the world, air tickets simply by tapping a smartphone. So cold, fierce, mouth breathing can frost your lens. I refuse to cough. When I'm on a mobile device, I'm more likely to be presentable. After passing through the gate, I start coughing. Why, the father asks his son, do you always cry when you have to do your homework? I don't know, the boy says. We're not really going backwards. We're standing side by side in a small cloud of our own breath. This little pamphlet's for sale up here, and it's got in the front of it, and Maureen talked about it, is our address for our blog. And we're traveling around and spending a great deal of time being here and then running back to our room and writing this blog. and we're writing individually together, and we collage it together. Anyhow, so you might be interested in following the whole journey that we have been taking all around the country. I love Maureen's poem, Mom. It's one of my favorites. Okay, I'm going to read about five poems from here, and that's it. This is different. These were written while Trump was running and after he got in, and the whole mood of the country changed, and my whole mood changed too. So.
Yeah.
Okay, but the first one doesn't reflect that for some reason. I tell you that anyhow. They're called digigrams. The moon. Hang a dress in the lobby. Wrong size for 2016. Once twirled around like a flower on a highway. Soon on a hanger in some other closet, reading Walter Benjamin, Berlin Childhood, what was and what might be, a shelter, the rhythm of the railway, ringing of a bell, a butterfly hovering, each passing moment to gaze, to touch, as a child, the moon, out of Berlin window, high above the horizon. Then a pale circle in the afternoon sky, growing, 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 until it sucks up, tears apart, people place, iron rails like Krishna opening the veil. It was my farewell, Benjamin writes. Oh, star and flower, spirit and dress, love, grief, time, and eternity. In 1938, this miniature deleted, perhaps too much, the melancholic grip. Start over at the beginning with children, the weight of the book pressing against my chest. Drift off. I collected what I wanted to take across, he writes, from then to now. On the queue into Manhattan through the slit between my eyelids, an almost empty car, two women dozing. One leans forward, hair cropped, ear level, mid-60s, freckles, arms crossed, head bobbing as a train jerks, little brown bag on her lap. The other woman, one leg crossed over the other, shoulder length, glistening black hair, leaning to the side, head against rail, dozing, trading relatively quiet today. Investors returning from Thanksgiving vacation. The car quiet climbs over the Manhattan Bridge, behind the ropes and rails, the Brooklyn Bridge. Dark scattered clouds, the western sun a golden hue. A 6'3" Justinian cross over the World Trade Center. Young adults brought here as children, soon sent to places they never knew. Underground we go, the conductor says. This is Canal Street, Chinatown. The older woman stands up, head still bowed, doors open, and then she's gone. String ball. This is for Naveen Mishan, who's a yoga teacher, and for Charles Blow, who you probably all know, he writes for the Times opinion pieces for the Times. The body's organized on a square, so says Yogi Naveen. I walk around Tompkins Square, all four corners. Surely this is the center of the universe. The goal is life, should be joy. The goal in life should be joy. And Larong Gar, the Chinese are tearing apart Tibetan monastic dwellings. Plan your life like a chess game. Move analytically with intent. It's very practical, the way to attain joy. Even for civilians trapped in a lay pope with artillery shelling overhead, defeat in life is bitterness. Buck up, writes Charles Blow, it's over. The bully's in the White House for the time being. Alt-right is not a computer command. They're a badge of fanatical racists. If you're happy, you'll help everyone. If you're miserable, you won't help anyone. In Shuafat, a refugee camp in Jerusalem, Baha helps the orphans work, find direction, survive. Then a drive-by, 10 bullets. One of the children will surely take his place. You can follow fake news sites from one to another. Unravel the molecular structure of ribosomes, a tangled mess of rubber bands and coiled wires, a new pattern of income equality. Life expectancy in the U.S. declines slightly. Be careful. It's like a string ball. If we keep going around in the same direction, we will surely unravel. Me too. Rheumatic fever turns the skin yellow. A heart scarred. Soon my mother says she will take my place. I wear her old stockings, dye my hair henna like hers, smoke cigarettes, wear red lipstick, her fringed leather jacket. At 18 at the sewing machine, my foot is hers pressing the pedal. There's a murmur in your heart, the doctor says, but soon it will heal. In the afternoon I birth a child, walk down the hallway in her turquoise bathrobe. At the zoo, an old female orangutan locks eyes with a young woman breastfeeding a baby. Yes, she nods, me too. At 37, my two children sound asleep, and all of a sudden I wake up, surprised to be alive. What about the others, I think? The motherless migrants, the refugees, the cumulative wound, rooms that murmur and whisper, remember me, take care of them, take care of you. I have two more shorter ones. Not that much shorter, not like Maureen's short ones. Two lines shorter. Chocolate. The dog whines, thumps her tail, pajamas, bare feet, tiptoe downstairs. In the fridge, nothing sweet, no leftover pudding. Scurry up on the counter quietly into the cupboard, a box of cooking chocolate. Police officers lie in wait, nabbing the child who sneaks under the turnstile. Unwrap a square, take a bite, look. Put it back into the wrapper, into the box. Who took a bite, who did it? Not me, not me. Why so skinny? Second helpings for the well-fed, a lesson learned early on. When they blow a whistle, we scurry to our feet, slam into each other. Enough is enough. Why lavish a bully with the acclaim so clearly he demands? The forgotten white majority. Where are we going? Our young lithe bodies deep inside these flesh bags, heart throbbing, climb down to get away. Years later, here alone in the dark, me, 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 throbbing oh so loudly. And this is the last, with a bang. With a bang, the hairy flower wild petunia flings its tiny seed sudden and far. How and why the scientist kneels down, claps a metal band on a pigeon's leg. Her initials and ID number. My broken toe x-rayed recorded. At the Bleecker Street station, an old man with head bowed kneeling on cardboard. An overcrowded shopping cart a sign. Repent, the end is near. The Indian guru whispers, the only sin to harm oneself, to harm another is to harm oneself. To repent too much is to harm oneself. On the platform, the next generation leans over keyboard, riffs, breaks, runs, his body hunched, fingers flying 30 miles an hour, all at once released, the seed spin outward, the bird flutters into the air. Thank you.